Good morning, Christine.
Good morning. Thanks ever so much for inviting me on your show.
That is an absolute pleasure. Now, Christine, we had a little natter on the phone yesterday where you told me a little bit about yourself and about the book that you've written, but we need to tell our lovely listeners. So first up, do tell our lovely listeners whereabouts we're calling you from this morning.
Well, I live in Kidwelly. I'd love to say that it's sunny Kidwelly, but actually it's not raining, so that's not too bad.
Mm-hmm. There we are.
Yeah, so yes, Kidwelly, I'm sure a lot of your listeners will know where that is. Ancient borough of the castle between Llanelli and Carmarthen, so
yes.
Fairly west.
A lovely part of the world. I've spent a lot of time over the years down in Carmarthen and indeed in Llanelli. Back in the day when I used to work for the Football Association of Wales as the press officer, we had lots of football matches at Stebbeneath Park. So that was a ground that I knew very well. And of course, latterly also, we used to play games at Parker Scarlets as well too. Yeah. Nice part of the world though. Good, genuine people, Christine. So,
and a lot of them are in Tricadno, I think it's fair to say.
Well, that's it. Now, Tricadno, now this is clearly a mythical village, or whatever you want to call it, I suppose.
Completely fictitious.
Completely fictitious. Much like all of us, really. Yes, completely fictitious. So, tell us a little bit about the background, first of all, before we actually get into the story of Tricadno. What gave you the idea initially to sort of want to pick up the pen, which is an old-fashioned term now, because clearly most people are using computers to write these things on. But what was it that made you decide there was a book in you, Christine?
Well, I think I've always enjoyed reading novels, and I've always quite enjoyed writing, to be honest, but never really had a chance. Tricadno actually started off a long time ago. I had a period off work when I wasn't very well, and I thought, you know, what can I do to amuse myself?
Surely,
really?
Yeah.
And one day I happened to be on a bus going through a small village not far from here, actually, that was so totally peaceful, so quiet. It was a summer's day. Nothing was happening, not a thing moved, there wasn't a person in sight.
Mm-hmm.
And it struck me that, you know, the village couldn't actually be like that the whole time. There had to be activity in there somewhere. People lived in this village.
Yes.
And so this gave me the idea of a place where actually there's an awful lot going on, but none of it is obvious.
Right.
And I wanted to make the whole story funny because I wanted to amuse myself. I wanted to have a good time, really, of writing it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I started the novel, 20 years ago.
Gosh, that long ago.
That long ago.
Wow.
And, you know, wrote a fair chunk of it and then went back to work, put it down, and I retired in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
I remembered about it and wondered, well, you know, what on earth is that like? So I had a read of it, giggled a bit, thought, okay, then this might be worth pursuing.
So if it was so long ago that you first started it, I mean, there's a very good chance that probably you did do it all longhand or on a typewriter to begin with.
No, it was on a word processor.
Oh,
yes,
well,
I did have a computer back then. Yeah, but yeah, it is quite nice actually to write longhand a little bit. And I do find sometimes, I'm often on the train going back and forth to see my daughter who lives in London,
mm-hmm.
and I do take a notebook with me, and I do try and write on the train, basically because there's nothing much else to do, and so where I've got an opportunity to do that, to write in longhand, I find that's a good starting point, and then
I think so.
You know, type it up and edit it as I go along.
Yeah, yes. So, I've already sort of given our lovely listeners a little bit of a teaser about the basic sort of plot line. But I mean, it's a well-trodden path, isn't it, with due respect, this idea of the sort of the fish out of water concept of somebody moving to a different town, whether it, you know, or indeed even a big city or whatever it is. Could be, you know, a country boy or country girl going to a big city, or as in this case, somebody coming down from the smoke of London to quite rural West Wales.
Yeah. Well, I think I took that point of view because I wanted the outsider's perspective on this community. I wanted, just like I was sitting on the bus and coming into it and wondering what on earth was going on, I think I wanted a new pair of eyes to reflect mm-hmm. what was happening rather than somebody who was already there and knew all about it.
Understood.
So I think that's why I picked on that theme, really.
Right.
And
right.
you're right, it's not particularly novel, I suppose, but I hoped that it works in this case and it explains perhaps why my main character, this newcomer, John Simmons, he gets into all sorts of scrapes. He seems ever so hapless, but it's because he doesn't understand what's going on, and the people who are already there, of course, know exactly what's going on.
It's that old sort of thing, isn't it, about still waters run deep, as you say, the twitching of the net curtains and so on, and him thinking, I'm sure there's more to this village than I'm seeing. And obviously for somebody...
And of course, foxes everywhere, of course, as it's worth pointing out, the Tricardinal means town of the fox.
Fox, yes.
So there are foxes everywhere, and they seem to be watching John, and he doesn't understand this. And there's a reason for it, which of course doesn't come out until the very end.
No. So how long, I mean, having had obviously that long hiatus where you'd put together the initial thoughts on it, then you returned to it, as you say, later in your life. How long did it then take you to sort of absolutely knock it all into shape and think, yeah, that's it, that's done?
Not too long, really. I guess about 3 or 4 months.
Right,
and,
yeah.
Then, of course, when I finally got to Candy Jar, who'd been very helpful, I had editorial support from Will at Candy Jar.
Yes,
and
yes.
So there was another sort of process, if you like, of knocking it into better shape.
No, I understand. As somebody who has done a non-fiction book with Candy Jar in the past, Will has been... invaluable from my point of view, and he is a wonderful editor, and absolutely put me to shame with regards to some of my grammatical mistakes and punctuations and so on, and I learned so much from him. But I mean, as you say, then that sort of takes the book onto another level again, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it's you know, people like Will, people in publishing companies who understand the perspective of the reader a lot better than the author does, really, especially somebody like myself who's completely new to the whole world. So it's invaluable to have that assistance, really, to you know, just for them to mould it and get it to that more polished state, I guess. I hope it's in a polished state.
Well, yes. I would hope so too by now. So without, as we said, giving away too much of the storyline, and certainly not, obviously, the ending, just give our listeners a little bit of a feel of the sort of book it is. And again, the sort of, if you like, the fact that it is maybe a little bit tongue-in-cheek, it's, you know, it's not too ridiculously serious, etc., etc.
Oh, it's definitely not a serious book. It's meant to be funny. It's a comic novel, I guess. Really.
Yes, yes.
It's meant to make people giggle. That is my intention.
Sure.
I wrote it to make myself giggle, really. It's meant to be a funny book. In my opinion, there aren't enough funny books. I sometimes pick up books that are described as being humorous, and they're not at all. So I don't know, maybe I've got an odd sense of humour, but I think it's great to have a good time when you read, really. So I think that was one of the key things in my mind. There's also a sense of mystery, I think. I think it's fair to comment. The foxes I've already mentioned.
Yes.
There's also a sort of sense, and the fox is a part of it, that there's something mysterious and faintly macabre going on. And this is highlighted in the Halloween vigil that John attends. So he's only been in Tricardinal a couple of months, and he's going along to this strange Halloween vigil, and it's all very spooky, and he's all, you know, a bit disturbed by it all. So there's this undercurrent of strange things happening.
Yes.
And again, it's not until you get to the end of the book that you realise why all these things are happening. And he understands why it is that the townsfolk are a little hostile and a little peculiar, maybe.
Peculiar, yes.
They're preserving a really big secret. So there's this undertone of secret going on, which I hope gives it the sense of mystery as well.
It sounds like a really enjoyable and fun book to read, and certainly I hope that I will get the chance to give it a go at some stage. When you were doing the writing, were you using family members and friends as sounding boards for ideas?
Well, not really, no. I did give it to my husband, who sort of read a bit of it and said, oh, yeah, it's okay.
All right, yes.
More because he wanted to sort of praise me rather than give an honest reflection, to be honest.
I'm sure he felt he was walking a very fine line, Christine.
I think he did feel that, in fairness. I think I did also send it to friends to have a read of. And they were very kind, really. One or two gave me some pointers as to how I could change it.
Okay.
They were very positive, and I don't think I'd have actually moved on with it if it hadn't been for people's positive responses. You're never quite sure whether they're saying things to make you feel good, you know, whether they're being...
No, it's tricky. Yeah, it's tricky. But as you say, the support of people, and let's be honest, the love of your friends and family around you, it all counts for a great deal, because inevitably, particularly obviously for first-time writers, there's a lot of rejection out there. There has to be, unfortunately, when you start sending it around to different publishing houses. And certainly our chums at Candy Jar in Newport Road here in Cardiff have given more than a leg up the first couple of rungs of a ladder to so many people over these last few years. And of course, particularly over the lockdown period.
Oh, I'm very grateful to them, really. And yes, I am very grateful to my friends as well. I think, as an author, you get so buried in what you're doing that old expression of not being able to see the wood for the trees.
Sure.
Really, you don't fully have a good perspective on what the reader might encounter.
So I think
to have other pairs of eyes on it and advice is invaluable.
Is important. So the book is being published now at the end of the month. So clearly it's an exciting time at the moment. But have you sort of already sort of hit the ground running and started to think about a follow-up?
Yeah. We've already had... books are, in fact, available as we speak.
Right.
I've already had a book signing at Goldstone Books, who've been in Carmarthen. They've been very kind to me.
Yes.
And I'm a member of a book club there, actually. Right. And they had Trick Hadnall as one of their monthly reads.
Excellent.
So that was interesting. And again, really, really, grateful to them for doing that and for giving me encouragement, the feedback from my fellow book club members was positive as well, so that was lovely.
I mean, book clubs are a great thing.
More of that.
Yeah, book clubs are a great thing, aren't they? Really,
oh,
I mean,
fun.
Let's be honest, it sounds a bit old fashioned, but I mean, you know, for people who really love reading, to be part of a book club where you know people are throwing ideas at you and saying, okay, this is going to be the next one we want everybody to read, it stretches people, doesn't it? Because too often, if we love reading, that is fabulous, but we all fall into a little bit of a rut, don't we, where we tend to read the same sort of genre of book all the time. I mean, with me, I love historical fiction and sort of, whodunits from the Victorian era and what have you, rather than the more bloodthirsty modern ones, though, in fairness, the Victorians were just as bloodthirsty. But book clubs obviously just take you out of your comfort zone a little bit, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I really, really enjoy it. Go into this book club for the reason you just said, that I'm introduced into new novels that I would never in a million years have picked up myself.
Yeah, frankly. Yes.
But also, it's a very social event, and it's really lovely to have that mix of talking to people and having a bit of fun and reading as well. So I think it's a lovely thing. I mean, I know that reading can be a very individual, private, solitary pursuit. And nothing wrong with that, but you know, to actually bring it into a more social sphere makes it even better, really, I think.
No, well said. So, your thoughts on a follow-up novel?
Well, I have started to think about it. I've got some thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Jottings are being made.
Jottings.
In a little notebook.
Jottings.
It's a very little notebook, tiny thing. So, yes, I'm trying to have some ideas. it would be lovely.
Well, it's a good thing, isn't it? Because clearly, initially now, you're going to have the fun of seeing this first novel, you know, be published and be available to people and hopefully get some very positive feedback. But of course, inevitably, there is such a long time lag then, isn't there? You know, for a second novel to come out or subsequent novel, whatever it may be, that, you know, you have always got to be trying to be a bit ahead of the game.
I guess so. I mean, it's a new game for me, so I don't really know where I am. But all I can say is that I really enjoyed writing Chicago, and I'm glad people are enjoying it as well.
Yes.
So it seems to me to be altogether sensible to carry on with the fun, really.
Well, no, absolutely.
And I'm in the fortunate position of being retired, so a lot of time.
You've got a bit of time. Yes, yes. So I have to ask another obvious question that, you know, you've set this in a small rural sort of town in West Wales, or village indeed. I mean, and have you sort of looked around at some of your friends and family and based any of the characters on them?
No, not really. I have been asked this a few times that there are a couple of characters who are sort of mixtures of people I've met over the years,
okay.
I would say. There's one character, the Deacon of Moriah Chapel, William Williams, who is based on a particular gentleman I won't say anymore.
No, absolutely not. No names, no patril. No, absolutely not.
But apart from him, they're mostly sort of mixtures of people, really.
Yes.
And yeah, you know, I guess without realising you've done it, you register some of the quirks and peculiarities of people, and they're stored up, and they come back to you when you start writing, I guess, really. And I've met some, you know, even in the locality, I've met some interesting and peculiar people.
Well, you're
but
bound
I
to.
Think, you know, over the span of one's lifetime and in different places, you get to meet all sorts of people.
I think that's I think, Christine, that's the lovely thing, isn't it, about sort of coming to writing later on in your life, that, yeah, you've got a lot of life experience. You can draw on, you know, your friendship or just the meetings that you've had with so many different people, some quirky, I mean, some good, some bad, as is in all walks of life.
Yeah.
But you've got all of those things then in your armoury, haven't you, when it comes to then thinking about characters that are going to be in the book.
Sure. I mean, I really admire young authors who are successful, and there are a lot of them. And it's amazing, you know, how they manage to do that with so little experience,
well,
really.
No, that's very true.
But yes, it seems to me that having been around for a fair time, that is one of the bonuses of it, that you've got this wealth of characters and experience that you can draw on.
Yes, yes. So with regards to the book, which is now, as we said, becoming available through Candy Jar, are you sort of going along to any speaking events, or are you going to be doing any readings anywhere, anything like that now over the near future?
I believe Candy Jar have got a few things lined up for me, but nothing immediately as far as I know.
Right, okay.
So I'm waiting to hear, but yes, I think it would be really sensible and obviously a good way of making sure that people know that the book is there.
And I think if people obviously get... If people get to meet you as well, they're going to think, gosh, this just sounds like a really clever idea. And you know, so often it's that personal connection, isn't it, that clearly down in West Wales, I'm sure now you will be big news.
Well, I don't know about big news.
Oh, there we are.
I think it's fair to say that the people in the locality have been very helpful. There are local shops, not necessarily bookshops, that have been stocking the book. It has been selling very well, so I'm really pleased about that.
We're delighted to hear it.
It seems to be touching a nerve with the locals, but then it is it is based on a community. Not
absolutely.
No,
absolutely. Well, Christine, thank you so much for joining me this morning on the phone to chat about the book, Tricadno. I'll certainly give it a mention now before the end of the programme as well. But I wish you all the best of luck with it, and fingers crossed we get the chance to speak again soon when you've got some more ideas about a follow-up book.
Oh, well, that would be really lovely. Thanks again for having me.
Thank you so much, Christine. Have a lovely rest of the day.
Oh, thanks.
Thank
all
you.
The best,
cheers. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.